Don't question a judge's decision. It just is. Haha, get it? Justice?
Wow, you are hilarious. Anyways, greetings and welcome to the Justice Served podcast. Thank you for tuning in. We are your hosts,
Jessica Selbryan
and Aaron Camelon.
In today's special, To Kill a Mockingbird edition, we will be discussing the topic of justice, how it relates to this insightful novel, and the way justice as a concept has changed from the 1930s to present day.
The book To Kill a Mockingbird tells the story of a black man who has been falsely accused of the rape of a wealthy white man's daughter. To the dismay of the town, a white lawyer decides to defend this black man, garnering him and his family hate and harassment.
Now, without further ado, let's get into our first key topic, racial injustice within the justice system.
Racial injustice within the justice system is a prevalent issue within To Kill a Mockingbird, as Tom Robinson was sentenced as guilty even when proven innocent because of the racial prejudice within the court system.
I agree. Atticus Finch provided substantial evidence that Tom Robinson did not rape Ewell's daughter. He declares that Tom and Maella were actually in love. However, Bob was ashamed of this and beat her up, and Atticus uses the bruises on her face to prove this.
Yes, exactly. Even with all the evidence proving Thomas innocent, the white jury is completely biased and declares Robinson as guilty just because he is black.
Shifting to present day, racism in our justice system is described in the article America's System of Juvenile Injustice by the San Diego Union-Tribune.
In this article, Jesse Jackson, a civil rights leader, explains that he believes the influence of Jim Crow is still present in the American criminal justice system today.
In fact, harsher sentences are consistently imposed on African Americans for possession of cocaine compared to the sentences whites receive for the same possession of cocaine.
I know. There is also evidence that shows a disproportionate number of African Americans on death row compared to whites, and the report, Injustice for Some, shows that Hispanic and African American youth receive more severe treatment than white youth for charges with comparable crimes. These minorities are also more likely to be arrested, sent to court, convicted, and given longer sentences.
However, more specific to the juvenile justice system, there is an idea of blatant bias. The statistics show that black youth are over 6 times more likely than white youth to be sentenced to prison.
Yes, and incarceration times for violent offenses are clearly disproportionate among youth of different races, as white youth are incarcerated for an average of 193 days, black youth for 254 days, and Hispanic youth for 305 days.
To compare, the state of racial injustice and bias within the justice system is still present, but less of an issue now in 2019 compared to the 1930s.
Good point. According to Time magazine, in the 1930s, 2/3 of those being executed were black. However, in 2017, this number is not as high, as 35% of those being executed are black. However, even though this rate has decreased, it is evident it still remains an issue today because African Americans only make up 13% of the American population.
And that's not all. There still seems to be racial bias present in court cases. For example, according to Time magazine, in Georgia, the Supreme Court approved the execution of a black man, Kenneth Fultz. A juror who decided in that case, Thomas Buffington, explicitly stated with derogatory language, "I don't know if he killed anybody, but the death penalty is what that deserved."
That outrages me. These injustices prove that while the justice system in general is not as flawed as it was before, there are still people who serve as judges and on the jury that may carry racial biases.
I agree. And while we still believe that our country has definitely made positive progress on eliminating racial injustice in court systems, there is much that still needs to be fixed.
Now, let's move on to our next key point, socioeconomic injustice within the justice system. A great example of socioeconomic injustice within the justice system is in To Kill a Mockingbird, because in the novel, Bob Ewell and his family were wealthy and well-off, which invoked further fear in the jury.
Exactly. Not only was Bob Ewell white, but he was also rich, which intimidated the jury even more because if they did not charge Robinson as guilty, Bob could easily further impoverish them due to his power.
And unfortunately, cases like this still occur to this day. A well-known present-day example of socioeconomic injustice within the justice system is the Ethan Couch Affluenza case.
I heard about that case. In fact, it was discussed in depth in the American Law Yearbook 2016, a guide to the year's major legal cases and developments.
According to this source, Ethan Couch was a 16-year-old who lived alone in his parents' second home, and on the night of June 15, 2013, he decided to have a party in which he got intoxicated.
The fact that later on that night he decided to drive intoxicated is just so irresponsible of him. This caused him to drive recklessly, and eventually he crashed into a ditch, while in the process hitting a vehicle parked on the side of the road, as well as the people standing beside it.
Yeah, and what makes this case so sad is that because of his irresponsibility and recklessness, he killed 4 people and wounded 1 person in this crash.
That's awful. What angers me so much is that his criminal defense team and his parents argued Couch was a victim of affluenza, essentially saying that his affluent lifestyle and his parents' relaxed parenting style justified his irresponsible choices, rendering him incapable of understanding consequences of his poor decisions.
That's terrible. As a result of this affluenza defense, he was sentenced to 10 years probation, despite the fact prosecutors pushed for a 20-year sentence. The injustice in this case is a perfect example of how socioeconomic injustice is still present in the United States today, as Ethan essentially got a lesser sentence and more leniency because his parents were rich.
That's true. Even though the state of socioeconomic injustice within the justice system is still present today in cases like this, it is still less prevalent as a whole because society does not accept this injustice anymore.
Good point. Basically, at that time in the 1930s and in the novel To Kill a Mockingbird, socioeconomic injustice was more socially acceptable, as at that point, many of the people affected by this injustice couldn't do anything to change it. No one would go against it because it was socially acceptable for people to be treated differently based on income levels.
That's true. Nowadays, society as a whole is more open-minded and has less prejudice due to the rise of equality movements and the spread of new ideals. However, in instances like this affluenza case, rich and high-class people can still get away with more crimes and less harsh sentences because of bribery and public image.
I agree. I'm so thankful for the progress our country has made in this situation, but there is still a long way to go to achieve equality in the justice system.
So, in summary, today we covered 2 main facets of inequality in our justice system: race and wealth / socioeconomic status, both in the 1930s and in the setting of To Kill a Mockingbird, and also how these issues are still prevalent today in 2019.
As we reach the conclusion of this episode, thank you again for joining us on this special To Kill a Mockingbird episode of the Justice Served podcast.
This is Aaron and Jessica signing off.